Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 807, Akshobhya. Akshobhya means who is undisturbed. Sri Parashara Bhatta, continuing his exposition of the present series of names in terms of Buddha avatar, says that Akshobhya refers to Buddha because when he presented his logic, his reasoning, his arguments to the demons, it wasn't that they just all immediately accepted him. They would argue back this way and that way, but he was undisturbed, being a very deep disposition, very deep thoughts, deep consciousness, and they simply couldn't upset his way of thinking or his arguments or his countenance. And in this way, that all contributed to their being defeated by him. Shankaracharya's interpretation is that unlike us, we in this material world, who are always disturbed, he is always unruffled and unshaken. We are disturbed by desire and hatred, the heat and cold, distress and happiness, the dualities of this world. We are affected. Everything at every moment is some kind of stimulus in our consciousness. It may not even be fully aware to us. There are so many things which we are subliminally aware of. So many thoughts are going on in our consciousness at various levels. So much is packed in to our thoughts. And everything contributes to a state of general discontent, disturbance. Even sometimes we feel somewhat content, and then that changes again. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Akshobhya. He's always cool, calm, happy, unperturbed. Nothing can disturb his equanimity of mind. He's full of divine bliss. He himself is the personification of what he speaks in Bhagavad Gita about being on the transcendental platform. Brahma bhuta prasannatma na shochati na kankshati samasarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. Well, the last line is for the conditioned souls who come to this stage of being on the spiritual platform, blissful in heart, prasannatma, not desiring anything of this world, nor lamenting for anything that they lost or they thought they might have wanted to obtain but they didn't obtain, being equal to all living beings. This is the spiritual platform, which of course the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself is on. Now, this is very important for all of us because we are disturbed in this material world, and our involvement with all the thoughts and the stimuli and the so many things in our consciousness going back from uncountable lives, we are disturbed. But the whole Bhagavad Gita, the teaching of Krishna, is how to come to the platform beyond mundane consciousness, to come to spiritual consciousness. So the basic platform of spiritual consciousness is Akshobhya, to not be disturbed by all of these things. Now, that's the basic platform, and above and beyond that, there is the platform of loving interchange and exchange. But the basic platform is to be undisturbed by anything material. We in this material world, we're always disturbed. There's so much tension and stress and turmoil and so many ordeals we have to go through, unlimited problems and difficulties and anxieties. It's a common theme when we're giving public lectures that we say to the public that, yes, everyone is suffering, is it not? From anxiety, family problems, and everyone's sitting there going, yeah. It's unfortunate, but it's true. We live in an age, especially, I mean, the condition of the material world is always like that, but in Kali Yuga, we're simply suffering as the mental disturbances are even worse than the physical disturbances. But if we remember Akshobhya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always unruffled and undisturbed, that will help us also to become unruffled and undisturbed. Yasmin stito nadu kena gurunapi vichalyate. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes the situation of a realized yogi as being one who, even in a situation of even in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes the situation of a yogi as being one who, even in a situation which would ordinarily be considered a cause of great distress, he's fixed in his transcendental consciousness. Fixed in his transcendental consciousness. Sri Shankaracharya likens the position of the sthita pragya to that of akshobhya. Sthita pragya is an important term in the opening of Bhagavad Gita. And actually this theme comes up in various ways again and again and again through Bhagavad Gita. Sthita pragya means one who is fixed in consciousness. In reply to Arjuna's question about what are the characteristics of someone who is fixed in consciousness, Lord Krishna replies, I'm going to read from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, texts 55 to 61, with Srila Prabhupada's translations. Lord Krishna is outlining the attributes of a sthita pragya, which are the characteristics of an akshobhya. So one who is fixed in transcendental consciousness, he will be undisturbed by anything of this world. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan parata manogatan atmanyevatmana tushta stita pragyas tadochate. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. And the next verse very clearly shows the correlation of the stithadhi muni, the thoughtful person who is fixed in transcendental consciousness, stithadhi, stitta pragya, the synonyms, the correlation between the stithadhi muni and the akshobhya. The next verse is dukeshvanud vignamana sukeshu vigata sprihaha vita raga bhaya krodha stithadhir muni ruchate. One who is not disturbed in mind, even amid the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. This is very important. We're talking about not being disturbed in the midst of a cause of disturbance, which we can imagine if there's tremendous heat or shita atapa vata varishana edina jamani jagire, either severe cold, tremendous heat, the blowing of the wind, the torrents of rain. These are examples of the kind of distresses the material world throws at us, which can cause us, naturally cause us to become distressed. So the akshobhya is one who is not distressed, even in the midst of cause of distress. And mentally, he's peaceful. But another side of this is that when we get something which materialistic people, which means almost everyone, would consider to be a cause of elation, the sthita dhimuni, or the akshobhya, doesn't become elated. Neither is he disturbed by distress, nor if, for instance, he wins the lottery. Not that sthita dhimuni buys a lottery ticket. Or suddenly great wealth comes to him. But he doesn't become, oh, now I can really enjoy myself. How wonderful. He doesn't think like that. We know the story of Sudama Vipra. Deeply poverty-stricken, but not disturbed by it. He went to visit Lord Krishna. He came back and found his hovel of a little cottage had been transformed into a palatial mansion. By the grace of Lord Krishna, he had become fabulously rich. So just as he wasn't disturbed in his grinding poverty, he didn't become elated and think, oh, now I can really enjoy myself. He didn't become elated on getting fabulous wealth, because in both situations he thought, well, I'm in poverty, Krishna put me in this situation, let me serve Krishna in the best capacity I can. And then in great wealth, all of a sudden he had great wealth, he thought, well, Krishna put me in this situation, let me serve him in the best way I can. Going on to the next verse in this series of verses from the second chapter of Gita. Yeah, saravatrana bisne has tat tat prapya shubham nabhinandati nadveshti tasya pragya pratishtita. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge, which is more or less a repeat of the previous verse in many ways. But on the other hand, we also have the term shubha ashubha. Even that which is, apart from being that which is directly a cause of pleasure or displeasure, we also have the phenomena which are the cause of that which is auspicious or inauspicious. But he's beyond material auspiciousness and material inauspiciousness, because he's fixed in transcendental knowledge, pragya pratishtita. Next verse, yada sangharate chayam, kurmongani vasaravashaha, indriyan indriyarate bhyas, tasya pragya pratishtita. One who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects as the tortoise draws its limbs within the shell is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. Vishayavinivartante niraharasya dehinaha rasavarajang rasopyasya parangdrishtva nivartate. Though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. Yatato hyapi kaunteya purushasya vipasyataha indriyani pramatini haranti prasabang manaha. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. Tani sarvarni sangyamya yukta asita matparaha vashehi yas yendriyarni tasya pragya pratishtita. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me is known as a man of steady intelligence. So here we have a description of someone who is practicing the sadhana by which he can become self-controlled. And of course, Krishna is akshobhya, and he's automatically sense-controlled. He doesn't have to do any sadhana to come to that platform. But either way, whether one is nitya siddha, sadhana siddha, or kripa siddha, it all comes to the same thing. Krishna is here giving the goal of the spiritual seeker to become aloof from the batterings of this world. And when one comes to that platform, he becomes qualitatively, not quantitatively, but qualitatively on the same level as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is akshobhya, or undisturbed. Here's a quote taken from a book published by the Madhva Sampradaya. The source of it is not given. Gabhirashayavatvena yavikaryataya parai akshobhya saptavarna syat akshobhyatva pradayakaha. The Supreme Lord is known as akshobhya, undisturbed, a name consisting of seven letters, because his mind is grave and because he is thus unaffected by anything or anyone. He also grants this quality of being unaffected to the living entities. So to come to that platform requires his mercy. He is akshobhya, undisturbed. He can bestow that upon us. Otherwise, this world is very disturbing. Considering this, what should we do? So much disturbance in the world. Maybe we should just find somewhere peaceful, get away from it all. Go to the Himalayas, find a cave and live in a cave, run away from it all. But it's not so easy to run away from repeated birth, death, old age, and disease. That condition won't stop by running away to a peaceful place. And we can't run away from the unpeaceful condition of our mind. But the very fact that we acknowledge that we are disturbed in this world and that it is miserable is a very good start on the path of coming to the platform being akshobhya, undisturbed. When we understand that this world is miserable, it is disturbing, and we can't change the world, there's so many movements and individuals who want to change the world and make it a better place. We can try and make it a better place, but birth, death, old age, and disease will go on, whether we're in a prison with iron shackles or silver shackles or gold shackles. We're tied up. We're chained in this material world. So an intelligent person, that means someone whose spiritual intelligence is beginning to be awakened, they consider that this world is miserable. You get born, there's only one way to get born. Well, for each species, there's one way to get born. I guess nowadays you could say there's more than one with cesarean deliveries. There's so many ways to die. It's not pleasant. We may talk about peaceful death, maybe the most pleasant death you could get is a peaceful death. Otherwise, it's not that I'm really looking forward to dying. Or maybe some people, their life is so miserable, they are, but it's misery on top of misery to think like that. A kshatriya who dies fighting, that is considered glorious, but it's painful. Nevertheless, it's not that kshatriyas don't feel pain. They are considered heroes because they accept that pain for the sake of trying to protect others. But it's painful. One may be courageous. It doesn't mean he doesn't feel pain. So we should think, why did I come to this material world? I made a big mistake. What am I going to do about it? It's full of distress. On the other hand, yeah, it's a good start to be free from the distress of this world by understanding that this world is free, is not free from distress, but I require to get free from distress. On the other hand, we shouldn't look at our immediate, we shouldn't become absorbed in our present situation and become overwhelmed by it. Understand the deeper platform. Mahabharata says that the remedy for sorrow is abstention from brooding over it. Now, if I think that, this person, they did that to me, they said that to me, and we just get all caught up in it. But what we find is that, as Mahabharata states, when sorrow is brooded upon, it comes back on, it increases more and more. When we think about, what after all is distress? It's a state of mind. What we're talking about, akshobhya, undisturbed. That means that the outside circumstances, that means that the external circumstances, they're changing all the time, and we're hoping they'll get better, but oftentimes they don't. But mentally, we're peaceful. On the other hand, the disturbance, what is the disturbance? It's something in our own mind. So if we just keep on chewing on that in our minds, regurgitating this, that, someone said this to me, they did that wrong, why did that go wrong? I'm so unfortunate. And then we increase our own misery by meditating upon it. Therefore, Mahabharata states, one should relieve mental sorrow by wisdom. Just as physical pain can be cured by medicine, so mental pain can be mitigated by wisdom, by considering everything in this world is temporary. Whatever I'm suffering from, there must be a cause for it. I must have done something wrong. The laws of karma are at work. So Mahabharata says, be wise. Become wise. One should not, while under the influence of sorrow, one should not come under the influence of sorrow, lamenting, brooding, and be like a child in this way. We are reminded of the term Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means free from distress, free from anxiety. It's the name of Krishna, and it's the name of Krishna's abode. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, therefore, as Krishna is Vaikuntha, without any anxiety, Krishna has no anxiety. Similarly, Krishna's place is also without anxiety. Krishna's activities, hearing Krishna, that is also without anxiety. If we want to be anxiety-less, then we should hear about Krishna. This is from a talk that Srila Prabhupada gave on October the 24th, 1974. So Krishna, he's akshobhya, not disturbed. But over and above that, He's very loving. Not just not disturbed, but he's very loving, very personable, very affectionate. Loving, this is the word. Love in this world means so much distress, so much cause of disturbance. Love in the spiritual world means it's anandam buddhi vardhanam, ever-increasing ocean of bliss. The love affairs in the spiritual world can be very complex. When we, in the Vrindavan pastimes, can be very complicated, but the end result is always prem. Sometimes we see complex mathematics, equations, and one has to be highly trained to and highly trained and highly intelligent to solve such equations. But in the spiritual land of Krishna's love in Vrindavan, things may be very complicated, but the result, the answer to everything is always the same, prem, pure love. All questions, all knowledge, this we learn from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everything ends in prem. We have in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, first verse, gives us an overview, succinct overview of the opulence and majesty and greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when we get to the third verse, we find out that this Srimad Bhagavatam is not only a treatise about the magnificence of the Supreme Lord, but over and above that, it's a treatise about the love of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam discusses directly and indirectly, anvyadvyatirekena, various philosophies which are incorrect, and refutes them. There's so many complex philosophies, so many complex disciplines, fields of study in this world, so many different perspectives, so many people offering different answers, and it's all just one big confusion. There's no clear answer. And definitely in this world, there's no real prem, although there's some perverted reflection of pure love. But in the spiritual world, however complex the situation, everything is resolved in pure love of Krishna. So even the name Akshobha, it may seem to be connected with Shantaras, the state of neutrality, but it is the underlying principle of prem, pure love of Krishna, which is the ultimate goal of life. Whereas in this material world, what is the love? I love a pretty girl. Then she gets mangled in an accident. And then what happened to the love? Well, that doesn't happen in the spiritual world, doesn't happen to Krishna. And even if our bodies get mangled, he still loves us. And even if we get messed up and mixed up in this material world and get distracted from Krishna and our Krishna conscious practices, he still loves us. And even if we think that Krishna isn't loving us properly, or we can't understand why we're put into so many difficulties, a devotee remains fixed, undisturbed in his position of loving God, following the example of Srimati Radharani, who, speaking as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Asishava padaritam pirashtuma madarshanan marmahatam karotuva. Yata tata vidata tu lampato mat prana natas tusva eva napara. Krishna. She's thinking of Krishna. Krishna is the Lord of my life in all circumstances. He may embrace me. I'll be very happy. Or he may kick me down on the ground and crush me under his feet. He may make me brokenhearted by just neglecting me and not having anything to do with me. But whatever he does or says, however he treats me, he is the Lord of my life unconditionally. So that's akshobhya. How we can be undisturbed in our love for Krishna as he is undisturbed in his love for us. I'm going to read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, which describes how by remembrance of the Lord's lotus feet, or even by remembrance of the toenails of his lotus feet, devotees become free from all material distress. Bhagavata uru vikramanghri shakha nakamani chandri kaya nirastatape hridi katam upasidatang punasa prabhavati chandra ivoditer katapaha. How can the fire of material suffering continue to burn the hearts of those who worship the Supreme Lord? The Lord's lotus feet have performed innumerable heroic deeds, and the beautiful nails on his toes resemble valuable jewels. The effulgence emanating from those nails resembles cooling moonshine, for it instantly relieves the suffering within the heart of the pure devotee, just as the appearance of the moon's cooling light relieves the burning heat of the sun. Sri Satya Sandha Yatiraj gives an understanding, which others had not done, of this name akshobhya. He gives a meaning for the previous name Suvarna Bindu. He gives a meaning for the name akshobhya. But he also combines these two as one name also. Suvarna plus Bindu plus Raksha plus Bhya, in which Suvarna Bindu refers to the demon Maricha, because he had golden dots all over his body when he took the form of a deer. So Suvarna Bindu, golden dot, refers to Maricha. Raksha refers to him, Maricha being a Rakshasa, and Bhya gives the idea of Bhaya. So he who caused fear to the demon with golden dots all over his body. Brilliant. Baladev Vidyabhushan states that he is called akshobhya, imperturbable, because he cannot be agitated by beautiful women's artificial smiles, glances, and so forth, when they lack pure love. And in this regard, he quotes from the first canto of Bhagavatam. Now, this is quite remarkable if we consider that this is describing the queens of Krishna in Dwaraka. Smayava loka lava darshita bhava harid bru mandala prahita saurata mantra shaundaihi patnyastu shodasha sahasra mananga barnayar yes yendriyam vimatitum karanayar nashikuhu. This gives the idea of the arched eyebrows of the queens. They smile very nicely with giving a message through the eyes of a desire for a conjugal union, coyly smiling, sidelong glances, these are all the affairs of love. Yet, even though the arrows of Cupid were being sent in volleys, and in so many other ways, they could not agitate Lord Krishna's senses. Now, I'm going to read, this is actually a series of several verses. I'm going to read them all. This is from the first canto, 11th canto. Sorry, this is from the first canto, 11th chapter. And it's very instructive about how Krishna is not materially agitated in any way whatsoever, even by the greatest cause for agitation. What is the greatest cause for agitation? Someone slaps you in the face, someone calls you bad names. The greatest cause for agitation is sexual agitation. If one is sexually attacked by the good looks or whatever, there are so many ways of subtle sexual attraction. Both females try to attract males, males try to attract females. How Krishna is beyond all this is described in these few verses I'm going to read. And how we also can come to that platform, most difficult platform, to be free from sexual or even any other kind of sensual attraction. So I'll read. Sa esha naralokesmin avatirna svamayaya reme stri ratna kutasto bhagavan prakrito yata. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, appeared on this planet by his internal potency and enjoyed himself among competent women as if he were engaging in mundane affairs. Udama bhava pishuna malavalguhasa vriravaloka nihato madano piyasam samuhya chapa majahat pramado tamasta yas yendriyam vimatitum kuhakair nashe kuhu. Although the queen's beautiful smiles and furtive glances were all spotless and exciting, and although they could conquer Cupid himself by making him give up his bow in frustration, and although even the tolerant Shiva could fall victim to them, still, despite all their magical feats and attractions, they could not agitate the senses of the Lord. Tamayang manyate loko hyasangam api sanginam atmaupam yena manujang vyaprinvanam yato buddhaha. The common materialistic conditioned souls speculate that the Lord is one of them. Out of their ignorance, they think that the Lord is affected by matter, although he is unattached. Etadishanamishasya prakritisto pitadgunai na yujyate sadatmastair yatabuddhistadashraya. This is the divinity of the Personality of Godhead. He is not affected by the qualities of material nature, even though he is in contact with them. Similarly, the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord do not become influenced by material qualities. So what do we learn from this? That Krishna appears to be a henpecked husband, a term that Srila Prabhupada sometimes used. It's a common phrase. He might appear to be controlled by the conjugal attractions of his wives, but he's not. He's akshobhya. He is attracted on the spiritual platform, but there's no mundane lust in that whatsoever. And what else do we learn from this? That we also can become free from material attraction by being his devotee, by taking shelter of him. In Rupa Goswami's Padyavali, there is a statement. How we can stop Kamadev, how we can stop the actions of the powerful God of love, or if we want to be more precise, the God of lust. Not by wearing saffron cloth, not by restricting food and other sense activities. Now, restricting food and other sense activities are helpful in controlling the senses, but we can't fully control the senses simply by this. Not by living in the forest, not by discussing philosophy, and not by observing a vow of silence. Now, all these things may help to control the senses, but ultimately control the senses only by even the slightest beginning of devotional service to the lotus feet of Lord Govinda, who enjoys pastimes on the Yamuna's wide banks, is Kamadev stopped. So Krishna's enjoying pastimes on the banks of the Yamuna. What is that? They're pastimes of love. How can we get free from the attraction of love / lust by even beginning our devotional service to that apparently lusty Lord? This may seem paradoxical. It is beyond mundane logic. That is a fact. Another meaning of the name Akshobhya is given. Akshobhya means not disturbed. That means he has very deep consciousness. He's very deep and very grounded. So another meaning is that he cannot be misled or confused by anyone. One whose level of thinking is very shallow, who's very much on the emotional platform, can be very quickly misled or confused, but Krishna is very deep. No one, however intelligent or cunning they may be, can mislead him. He has such deep thoughts himself that others can't even imagine. So we can't do some psychological manipulation to try to manipulate him. Deeply content, one who is deeply content cannot be disturbed, cannot be easily disturbed. Krishna is also the most discontent person, inasmuch as he feels deeply for all the suffering jivas, and therefore he comes again and again and again to this world to try to deliver us. Akshobhya is also the name of one of the prime acharyas in our parampara, or in the Madhva Sampradaya parampara, Akshobhya Tirtha. He was always thinking of Lord Akshobhya. To be a great devotee, one is always thinking of Krishna. His name is Akshobhya. He was always thinking of Akshobhya. By thinking of Akshobhya, one becomes Akshobhya. One becomes unruffled, unperturbed. He was a direct disciple of Sri Madhvacharya and the guru of Jayatirtha. Jayatirtha in the Madhva Sampradaya is huge, huge figure who compiled the Nyaya Sudha, which is, what can we say? In the Madhva Sampradaya, it's absolutely essential text, which is foundational to the Dvaita system. Foundational, yeah, we can say foundational. Yeah, even though Madhva's works are foundational, but the foundation became absolutely, even though the foundation is absolutely strong and safe, but Sri Jayatirtha, by his Nyaya Sudha, by his writing, his book, the Nectar of Logic, or Logic Nectar, it literally means he even more buttressed that foundation. Or let's say he made it clear and easy for others to understand, and how to especially the Nyayasudha is a rebuttal of Mayavad. So because Akshobhya was himself Akshobhya Tirtha, equipoised, balanced, unaffected by all these insidious propositions of the Mayavad philosophy, he was able to impart that to Jayatirtha, who compiled the Nyaya Sutta. This name Akshobhya comes again almost at the end of Sri Vishnu Sahasranam as name 999, and we can discuss it further at that point, Krishna willing. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya vacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nitaya churnakang padayo nipatya kritvacha kakushata metadaham bravimi heis sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat gauranga chanda charne kurutanuragaha. Parivadatu jano yathatatava nanumukaro navayang vicharayamaha hari rasa madira madati matta bhuvi viluta manartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.